together, the old dancers and the new, the ones who were there and the ones who were not, the women he had loved and the people who had come, and the stagehands responsible for putting out the lights. They were all his people, his animals, his spirit world, his life.
That's the voice of Jennifer Homans, winner of this year's Marfield Award for the best book in writing about the arts. And I believe it is a consummate book on what makes art. This is given by the Arts Club of Washington, D.C., and the series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Maryland State Arts Council, the Sinipet Fund, Bravada Foundation, Natalie Canavore, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and our engineer is Mike Turpin.
Hi, this is Dwight Yoakam, and you're listening to KBOO.
Welcome once again to Film at 11. We're doing a very special show today. And we've brought in Matthew of KBOO's Gremlin Time. Our topic today, which is a series of five films starring Randolph Scott, directed by Bud Baedeker, who's one of the great filmmakers of the time, and produced by a guy named Brown. And they're all made for a company called Renown, which is Randolph and Brown together. Often the writer was Bert Kennedy. One of these movies is based on an Elmore Leonard short story. Not only are they great westerns, but they say a lot about how the nature of the world of cinema in Hollywood, at least, changed at the end of World War II to the late 50s and early 60s when these films are coming out.
Brigade? Yeah. You were saying man needs a reason to ride this country, remember? Well, you were right. I don't suppose you heard about the poster they got out on Billy John.
Poster?
Gum tacked in the air of a tree and stomped between here and Rio Bravo. Claims the territorial. Grant amnesty to anybody that brings Billy in. You know, you won't believe this, but me and Wid went there a week before we found out what that word amnesty meant. Fella selling Bibles over in Santa Cruz told us. It means the law's willing to drop any and all charges it's got against a man. All he's got to do is turn the key on Billy. Now, I know that ain't the reason you rode him down, but, well, that's why me and Witt's gonna sort of tag along with you. See, we figure that when Billy's brother Frank hears that you were riding him in the hang, he's gonna come killing. But if anybody can get Billy safe to Santa Cruz, it's you.
If I do?
Then there's only one man standing between me and starting life clean over.
Boone, make doubly sure Witt keeps that Winchester on Billy John. We wouldn't want to lose him, would we?
We sure wouldn't.
We'd said a few months ago that the movie The Bishop's Wife with Cary Grant as a really good example of the type of movie made by the Hollywood studio. It's really a great Hollywood studio movie. 10 years later, the studios had had to relinquish their theater ownership. So produce, they could distribute, but they couldn't exhibit. And so that changed the whole makeup of the production of movies. More independence emerged. And this set of five Westerns is a good example of these independent filmmakers of the late 1950s, early 1960s. In this case, we have retiring or aging actor Randolph Scott as an executive producer with Harry Joe Brown to produce these movies that would be directed all by Bud Baedeker. The theater owners were really behind it because they knew that they could, here in the late 50s, television wasn't that big, but in the size of it. And so you had the small picture on TV. It wasn't even in color in most places. So you went to the movies to see a big color adventure, a big story. And so then the studios, they would produce these big epic films with thousands of extras and big name actors. But those movies would be expensive if you wanted to rent them. And so someone who could do low budget movies that people wanted to see, the theaters were ready to show them. You know, we've got the crime stories, we've got the juvenile delinquent stories, we've got the horror movies, but still there was a family audience for Westerns, but especially Westerns that took you outside of today and put you out in the country in the vast landscape of the West, which looms so large in the American legend. So this is a set of five movies, starting off with The Tall T, Decision at Sundown, Buchanan Rides Alone, Ride Lonesome, and Comanche Station.
These movies have come out before from a different DVD releasing company, the studio basically that originally released all the films. But this Criterion Collection is a big deal because it acknowledges that these are prized a product of the studio system and should be honored with the equivalent of, you know, a Library of Congress designation as a preserved movie. You know, when the Criterion Collection goes to work on a DVD or a DVD set of films, they go all out, and there's numerous extras here, a booklet that describes the making of each movie and who's in it, and documentaries about Bediger and the filmmakers, producers, Brown and Scott. I just want to add parenthetically that they weren't the only ones doing pocket movies. For example, Anthony Mann collaborated with Jimmy Stewart as a producer and the lead actor on a series of seven or eight films. Not all of them Westerns, but most of them were. And Randolph Scott had collaborated with Brown with earlier directors, among them Delmer Daves and Andre de Toth. And the quality among these movies is very different. The Toth films are a little harder, rougher, bleaker than these renowned films, which are the classic lone guy riding in the town and discovering something is wrong or gets mixed up in something that he didn't want to.
Or we've got, which it works into the classic Western story of a good man turned bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seeking revenge. And in the first two movies we want to talk about, that's the is one of the three films in this series which is about a man seeking revenge.
And right,
so the first one we want to mention is Ride Lonesome.
Get on the animal, Billy, we're going back.
Now you know I can't do that.
Anything you can.
Look, Brigade, if I was to ride south with you, there's them and see me hang.
You left a dead man in the street in Santa Cruz.
A fair fight.
He was killed from behind, like the others.
I don't know how much they're paying you to bring me in, but it ain't enough. Not near enough.
I'd hunt you free. Let's go.
I guess that kind of makes me a liar, don't it? Them boys didn't go ahead. They're scattered, all in rocks. No way for you to get out of here.
Randolph Scott had been a leading man in movies since the early 1930s. Scott himself had been a veteran, had served over in World War I, and then came back, went to college, this is in the 20s, eventually ended up in Hollywood. By the time he's doing these movies, he has matured into someone who has suffered pain, loss, and hardship. And he shows a sort of stoic calm in the face of these hardships, which he, you know, came by chance. And so we find that out as the movie goes along. The opening of Ride Lonesome is like in probably all of these movies. We have a landscape. The titles are emblazoned in front of us with a really bold font. And we go through, we just see this rock-strewn landscape. And it isn't until near the end of the titles that we begin to pick out a man on horseback making his way.
And right.
In this, you see there's like a gap in between these big boulders and the rider is approaching the camera, but he's still kind of far off. And the camera sort of tilts down for a little bit as he dismounts and he comes up to a rock and then he sort of seems to be listening to something. And then the camera pans over even more to find an area where a man is laying on the ground next to his horse and he seems to be doing something. And we hear the horse.
I hear him.
Morning, Brigade.
And so right off, we have this confrontation. We've got the strong man and the weak man. We've got Randolph Scott, who'd been in the movies forever, confronting this younger, more intense actor, James Best. He was in a couple of great episodes of The Twilight Zone around this time. He would be the goofy sheriff in The Dukes of Hazzard, and he even made a recent appearance on the final season of the series Justified. And so here he is, Billy. He shot this man in the back. Brigade's come to take him in, and they try to trap him. But no, Brigade is able to just face him down at this point.
You don't understand. I give the word. You're dead.
Maybe, but before I hit the ground, I'll blow you half in two.
You're blushing.
Am I? Call him off, Billy.
Hold your fire, boy! It ain't gonna work. I knew I should have done it my way.
In the back.
He faces off with the man, and it turns out it's a trap. There's all these guys around him. But as Scott says, look, I'll be able to shoot you before they take me down. And so it just plays on the guy's cowardness. And so he sends them all away to go get his brother.
Hey, Charlie! Charlie! You'll find my brother, Frank! You tell him what's happening! Tell him Ben Brigade's taking me to Santa Cruz! You hear me, Charlie? Well, you tell him that! He'll know what to do! Now get going!
And we don't think much of it at that point, but as the story goes on, just to kind of give a little bit away, is he's bringing this man in just to lure the brother out. Or something that the brother had done to Scott, to Scott's wife, in fact. And this comes out later in the story. So here we've got, like in The Naked Spur with James Stewart, he's bringing a man in for a reason, but we don't know the reason why right off. And then we've got the two men, Purnell Roberts and James Coburn. They also want to bring the man in because the governor of the state's going to forgive any man for what they did if they bring this guy Billy in. So they join up with Scott, and they get to a stagecoach, a relay station, and they find out that the station master has went off, and his wife, played by the lovely Barbara Steele, later Mrs. Baedeker, she's left alone there. And so Scott, in his stoic way, he perceives that the husband has been killed because the Indians, the Comanches, are on the warpath for some reason. And so he figures that we'll take her to town and I'll turn this guy in and we'll go this way. And you guys come along and you can share the credit. It's kind of loosely comes about like that. So here we've got, it's a travel across the countryside. So here again is this wonderful spectacle of shot around Lonesome Pine in California, and mountains and little creeks with trees around them and open plains and all sorts of rough countryside that fills the screen as they make their way. In this movie, Ride Lonesome.
Interesting contrast with the movie you mentioned earlier, The Naked Spur, which has James Stewart under the direction of Anthony Mann. And in that movie, the James Stewart character, and all the Mann movies, is allowed to be emotional, rather desperate, short-tempered, and so the contrast with Randolph Scott in this series, where he's laconic, speaks in short, almost Zen Cohen sentences about manliness and duty, really keeps things close to his chest. He doesn't reveal very much, and Baedeker and the writer, Bert Kennedy and the others, they leave all the emotion and the comedy to the co-stars,
yeah,
to these great character actors, and gives them an opportunity to shine and carry the weight of what you would get from, often would get from the leads in a Western.
It could be he figures it'd make it just that much harder on us.
On us?
Well, now we're riding with him. Now, Frank might not hold too kindly to that. Could get us killed.
I never thought about that.
One way or the other, Brigade's got to face it out, and he knows it.
Well, maybe we should ought to forget about the whole thing.
We've got a way of life.
Well, we can't do that.
But if Frank's going to come down here...
You've been up north of Socorro with...
So?
Got me a place up there. Ain't
you much. Got a place?
Ain't much. Not yet, it ain't. Got my herd to bill, wire to stretch and such. Only trouble is, I ride back there, there's them to see me hang. Unless, of course, the territory was to drop the charge.
Or that word.
Amnesty.
Amnesty.
So we get old Billy Boy back to Santa Cruz and we got it. We're just that close to never having to look over your shoulder again and sleep with a gun in your hand. Going off dead inside when you see a man wearing tin on him. Oh, we just come too far, Whit. We can't turn back now. We just plain can't.
Baedeker also goes against convention in the way that he stages a lot of his drama and dialogue scenes outside, unlike, say, in a John Ford movie where a lot of the interesting stuff happens inside. In the Baedeker film, the drama happens outside. The characters interact outside. And Baedeker uses the landscape in a very artistic way that brings out the story, even though he's not filling the landscape with a lot of extra people and horses and things.
That's true. And he's a great user of the CinemaScope frame and with color. And yeah. So you get the great sense of the sheer, as with the very opening shot, the sheer oppressiveness of this unforgiving landscape where these men at odds with each other battle for some kind of either recognition or a leg up or some profitability. Yeah.
Now then the follow-up film is called Comanche Station. Similar where Scott is has a revenge thing, but it's a little bit different. He's lost his wife and he's trying to make up for it by saving other men's wives. And so he rescues this one woman from these Indians, by trading for her, but they know that they're going to change their mind. And so they're kind of on the run from them. And then they run into the villain, in this case, played by Claude Akins, somebody who the Scott's character knew from the past and knew as a bad man, but they have to pull together in this instance. And so there's this tension. And again, there's a journey and they're being chased and finally leads to a confrontation. And that's Comanche Station, which was the last of the movies. It seems like Scott was doing a good investment here. He did these low-budget films that could make a lot of money because they were popular and the theater wanted to show them. And then he retired. He did the Sam Peckinpah movie after this, and that was it. So
yeah. Yes, it is an investment, but also their manner of making the movies is to go off with a fairly small crew of technicians and performers and just get away from the studio. We're going to leave, we're going to Lone Pine, and we're going to come back in 3 to 4 weeks with a movie. And they just do that once or twice a year. And they're really profitable and universally ignored by reviewers, except maybe a passing review in Variety, but certainly no attention from publications such as the New York Times. Indeed, they're kind of mocked at times. And it wasn't until the advent of the French magazine Cahiers du Cinéma, where directors like Baedeker, Samuel Fuller, and so many others would get this very close scrutiny, that's really looking at how these movies are being told visually. And themes that are recurring from one film to the other, or variations thereof.
Now, the two other films that are not like the rest of the films are more set inside, and that's Decision at Sundown, which is an amazing film as an anti-Western, and I think ranks up with movies like High Noon or Oxbow Incident. We've got The Man Seeking Revenge, and it all goes sideways on him so that at the end he's a broken man. He's gotten revenge. He's freed up this town, but no, it's at a cost. He's killed his best friend and he's found that the whole reason he's going on the revenge is wrong. And that's something that you don't see too much in these sort of movies. The righteous man is always right. Whereas here, he's using this righteousness to get back at a man he thinks is responsible for his wife's suicide.
He's a bad guy. And you don't really understand that at first. You're wondering about his motivation. But gradually, as the people who live in this small town, as their relationships and interactions become clearer, the Randolph Scott character really stands out for how isolated and kind of inhuman he is, when despite being surrounded by all these people that form a nice, important environment, you know, carving out a city out of nothing in the middle of a desert. And it's on a fellow's wedding day, and he's there to disrupt that wedding.
It also disrupts everything, at least in the conventions of the Western. He doesn't arrive on horseback at the beginning of the movie. He gets out of a stagecoach, so he emerges from a box. And then they go into town, and right off it, like, they go to the barbershop, and it's not the same at the barbershop. And then they go to the bar, and they're refusing to have drinks given to them because they have this argument against the man who's buying drinks, and so they want to insist on buying their own drinks. This movie goes in very unexpected ways. I thought it a nice forerunner to most of the Western dramas that would end up on television, many of these actors appearing in all of them as well. Bedeker himself was involved in the creation of the series Maverick with James Garner, also at this same time. The other movie that's sort of the indoor movie is Buchanan Rides Alone. And in this, Scott is like the true, you know, good-natured traveler. He has had these experiences, but he just wants to come through this town. He's crossed the border. He's been a mercenary or something. He's been paid. He can't wait to get back to the U.S. and then get back to West Texas. But he wants to stop at the town and, you know, have a steak meal and have a night's rest and then move on. But the town is like, hey, he's got money. How can we get him? And it's like all these things work at trying to. Even at the point when he's like going to be hung with this other man who he's helped defend, he's like, oh, well, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, he's a little bit lighthearted, but it's a very interior episode in the series, if I remember right. A lot of interiors, not so much exterior, but it has some great actors. Craig Stevens, the poor man's Cary Grant.
Yeah.
And L.Q. Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Who later worked closely with Peckinpah and numerous other.
Well, he also directed the movie A Boy and His Dog.
That's right.
Now, the best film of the lot, I'm going to say, is The Tall Tea, adapted from an Elmore Leonard story. In the opening, like they would do in the other films, a rock-strewn, mountainous countryside, and he emerges from the rocks, and then he rides toward the camera, and then he sort of stops and stares. And then as he starts to move on again, the camera reverses to behind him, and we see a little structure and some trees and some water in this big, all this brown mountains. And he comes down, and it's a stagecoach station, and he's talking with the man and talking with his son, and it's all very lighthearted, but there's a little thread of ominous danger in the background, the darkness inside the buildings as opposed to the light outside, the skins of animals, you know, coyotes and wolves in the background, and how the man's kind of on edge because they're almost like they're expecting trouble. And then we find out that the wife has died, and they talk about being isolated and everything. And so as the movie goes on, Scott loses his horse and everything and is carrying his saddle, and he gets picked up by a stage. It turns out it's a special stage. I mean, at first it seems like, wow, this is a good luck. I can just get a ride to the stage station and they'll lend me a horse and I can get home. But things turn different.
What's your prize for the lift, Ed?
Anytime, Patrick. Hey, Hank! Rentoon, is there anything wrong?
Nothing we can't handle without you, Willard.
Jeff! Hey, Hank!
You all drop your guns and come on down.
So three men who had expected to rob the stage had taken over the stage station. Hello. and they killed the master and his son, and they dumped him in the well, and they waited to ambush the stage. And now this special stage had come along, and this is like this woman had gotten married to this man, and she's the daughter of a wealthy man in the area, and so he is like hired a special stagecoach to take him, and so it gets mistaken for the regular stage, and now they're in the hands of these very desperate villains.
The villain in this one, played by Richard Boone, is one of the most terrifying and fascinating characters in the villainy aspect of the Baedeker Randolph Scott Westerns. And Richard Boone is really one of the most unheralded great actors of the 50s and 60s.
Yes.
Suppose you're wondering how come we'd be keeping you around.
Am I?
Plain-faced truth is, I like you, Brennan. Ain't many men I can say that about.
Many say it about you?
There was then, when they did. Yeah. Time was, I was looked on with a fair amount of respect where I come from.
Where's that?
Wyoming.
A long way from home.
I have to admit. Why, there's them would see me hang if I was to ride there again. Strange, the law wanting to do me that way. Me, I never tripped a hammer on a man in my life. I'll leave that to young guns like them two over there. Look at them. Billy Jack, no folks, no schooling. Been fighting and cheating his way since he was first able to walk. And Chink the same. Shot his first man dead when he was 12. His old man on him beating his mother with a broken tequila bottle. Nothing but animals.
You run with them?
Well, I can't help the way they are. Nobody can help their kind.
Nobody tries.
Well, I sure don't know why I like you, Brennan. You talk back, you act proud when you should be bowing down. I sure don't know why. But I tell you this, your hill's gonna get higher to climb come tomorrow morning. That money gets here, Billy Jack and Chink will be all for killing you and the lady.
And you?
Like you say, I run with them.
Also in the movie is Maureen O'Sullivan as a woman who was going on her honeymoon, but then the bad guys wanted the stage, thinking it was the regular stage, and are now going to hold her for a ransom from her rich father. And so she and Scott are kind of thrown together at the mercy of these men. But of course, in this movie, it's interesting how Scott's character actually turns things around. And they're actually going on the offensive.
Stay here, I'll get you a horse. See that lone peak? Ride right at it. You'll hit the Sassabe. When you do, swing south. It follows on into my place. You'll be safe there.
Oh, what about you?
I'm going to finish this. They come, I'm going to finish this once and for all.
Oh, but what?
Some things a man can't ride around.
I'm staying with you. For 2 days you've been telling me what to do and what not to do. Not anymore. If you stay, I stay.
It's called The Renown Westerns. And that's a composite of Randolph Scott and Harry Joe Brown.
And lots of extras. Now, what's the book that we were looking at, too?
There's a great book about Baedeker called, it's in a series called Revisions. And it's a series of essays by different people, each addressing one aspect of Baedeker's career, but with a probably special emphasis on the Westerns just because they're so significant as really finely crafted examples of what Hollywood could do at its best, you know, with ambiguities and thematic concerns that just seem you're so unused to in Westerns, you know, as particularly before they became, quote, adult in the late 40s and through the 50s.
Right.
It's a fantastic set. So we've been talking to Matthew of KABU about the renowned Westerns, a set from the Criterion Collection with five movies directed by Bud Baedeker and starring Randolph Scott. It's a fantastic set, and it will really open your eyes to the value of Westerns if you're kind of skeptical of them or think they're kids' films. So thank you, Matthew, and we will...
keep watching the screen.
We will keep watching the screens. Thank you.
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO listeners. KBOO cut through the clouds during our end-of-year campaign thanks to support from listeners like you. When we meet our campaign goals, we can continue to bring you colorful, radiant rays of radio. Thank you, and keep tuning in for unique music, cutting-edge news, and transformative public affairs on the airwaves.
Tune in to Locus Focus, a weekly conversation about our place on the planet, every Monday morning at 10 on KBOO Community Radio. Each week, host Barbara Bernstein talks with local, regional, and national experts, activists, and policymakers about climate change, river protection, the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy, salmon restoration, forest management,